Act 5 opened with a stormy scene between Zara and Don Pedro. He wishes her to go into a convent, but she won't hear of it, and after a touching appeal is about to faint when Rodrigo dashes in and demands her hand. Don Pedro refuses because he is not rich. They shout and gesticulate tremendously, but cannot agree, and Rodrigo is about to bear away the exhausted Zara when the timid servant enters with a letter and a bag from Hagar, who has mysteriously disappeared. The latter informs the party that she bequeaths untold wealth to the young pair and an awful doom to Don Pedro if he doesn't make them happy. The bag is opened, and several quarts of tin money shower down upon the stage till it is quite glorified with the glitter. This entirely softens the stern sire. He consents without a murmur. All join in a joyful chorus, and the curtain falls upon the lovers kneeling to receive Don Pedro's blessing in attitudes of the most romantic grace. Tumultuous applause followed, but received an unexpected check, for the cot bed, on which the dress circle was built, suddenly shut up and extinguished the enthusiastic audience. Rodrigo and Don Pedro flew to the rescue, and all were taken out unhurt, though many were speechless with laughter. The excitement had hardly subsided when Hannah appeared, with Mrs. March's compliments, and would the ladies walk down to supper. This was a surprise even to the actors, and when they saw the table, they looked at one another in rapturous amazement. It was like Marmy to get up a little treat for them, but anything so fine as this was unheard of since the departed days of plenty. There was ice cream, actually two dishes of it, pink and white, and cake and fruit and distracting French bonbons, and in the middle of the table, four great bouquets of hothouse flowers. It quite took their breath away, and they stared first at the table and then at their mother, who looked as if she enjoyed it immensely. "Is it fairies?" asked Amy. "It's Santa Claus," said Beth. "Mother did it," and Meg smiled her sweetest, in spite of her grey beard and white eyebrows. "Aunt March had a good fit and sent the supper," cried Joe, with a sudden inspiration. "All wrong. Old Mr. Lawrence said it," replied Mrs. March. "The Lawrence boy's grandfather? What in the world put such a thing into his head? We don't know him," exclaimed Meg. "Hannah told one of his servants about your breakfast party. He is an odd old gentleman, but that pleased him. He knew my father years ago, and he sent me a polite note this afternoon, saying he hoped I would allow him to express his friendly feeling toward my children by sending them a few trifles in honor of the day. I could not refuse. And so you have a little feast at night to make up for the bread and milk breakfast." "That boy put it into his head. I know he did. He's a capital fellow, and I wish we could get acquainted. He looks as if he'd like to know us, but he's bashful. And Meg is so prim she won't let me speak to him when we pass," said Joe, as the plates went round, and the ice began to melt out of sight, with ohs and ahs of satisfaction. "You mean the people who live in the big house next door, don't you?" asked one of the girls. "My mother knows old Mr. Lawrence, but says he's very proud and doesn't like to mix with his neighbors. He keeps his grandson shut up when he isn't riding or walking with his tutor, and makes him study very hard. We invited him to our party, but he didn't come. Mother says he's very nice, though he never speaks to us girls. Our cat ran away once, and he brought her back, and we talked over the fence, and we're getting on capitally, all about cricket and so on, when he saw Meg coming and walked off. I mean to know him some day, for he needs fun, I'm sure he does," said Joe decidedly. "I like his manners, and he looks like a little gentleman, so I've no objection to your knowing him, if a proper opportunity comes. He brought the flowers himself, and I should have asked him in, if I had been sure what was going on upstairs. He looked so wistful as he went away, hearing the frolic and evidently having none of his own." "It's a mercy you didn't, Mother," laughed Joe, looking at her boots. "But we'll have another play sometime that he can see. Perhaps he'll help act. Wouldn't that be jolly? I never had such a fine bouquet before. How pretty it is! And Meg examined her flowers with great interest. They are lovely, but Beth's roses are sweeter to me, said Mrs. March, smelling the half-dead posy in her belt. Beth nestled up to her and whispered softly, I wish I could send my bunch to Father. I'm afraid he isn't having such a merry Christmas as we are. Chapter 3. The Lawrence Boy.
Joe! Joe! Where are you?
Cried Meg at the foot of the garret stairs.
Here!
Answered a husky voice from above, and running up, Meg found her sister eating apples and crying over the air of Redcliffe, wrapped up in a comforter on an old three-legged sofa by the sunny window. This was Joe's favorite refuge, and here she loved to retire with half a dozen russets and a nice book, to enjoy the quiet and the society of a pet rat who lived nearby and didn't mind her a particle. As Meg appeared, Scrabble whisked into his hole. Joe shook the tears off her cheeks and waited to hear the news.
Such fun! Only see, a regular note of invitation from Mrs. Gardner for tomorrow night, cried Meg, waving the precious paper and then proceeding to read it with girlish delight. Mrs. Gardner would be happy to see Miss March and Miss Josephine at a little dance on New Year's Eve. Marmee is willing we should go. Now what shall we wear?
What's the use of asking that when you know we shall wear our poplins, because we haven't got anything else, answered Joe with her mouth full.
If only I had a silk, sighed Meg. Mother says I may when I'm 18, perhaps, but 2 years is an everlasting time to wait.
I'm sure our pops look like silk, and they are nice enough for us. Yours is as good as new, but I forgot the burn and the tear in mine.
Whatever shall I do? The burn shows badly, and I can't take any out. You must sit still all you can and keep your back out of sight. The front is all right. I shall have a new ribbon for my hair, and Marmee will lend me her little pearl pin, and my new slippers are lovely, and my gloves will do, though they aren't as nice as I'd like.
Mine are spoiled with lemonade, and I can't get any new ones, so I shall have to go without, said Joe, who never troubled herself much about dress.
You must have gloves, or I won't go, cried Meg decidedly. Gloves are more important than anything else. You can't dance without them. And if you don't, I should be so mortified.
Then I'll stay still. I don't care much for company dancing. It's no fun to go sailing round. I like to fly about and cut capers.
You can't ask Mother for new ones. They are so expensive, and you are so careless. She said when you spoiled the others that she shouldn't get you any more this winter. Can't you make them do? Asked Meg anxiously.
I can hold them crumpled up in my hand, so no one will know how stained they are. That's all I can do.
No, I tell you how we can manage. Each wear one good one and carry a bad one. Don't you see?
Your hands are bigger than mine, and you will stretch my glove dreadfully, began Meg, whose gloves were a tender point with her. Then I'll go without. I don't care what people say, cried Joe, taking up her book.
You may have it, you may, only don't stain it. And do behave nicely. Don't put your hands behind you, or stare, or say Christopher Columbus, will you?
Don't worry about me. I'll be as prim as I can and not get into any scrapes if I can help it. Now go and answer your note, and let me finish this splendid story.
So Meg went away to accept with thanks, look over her dress, and sing blithely as she did up her one real lace frill, while Jo finished her story, her four apples, and had a game of romps with Scrabble. On New Year's Eve, the parlour was deserted, for the two younger girls played dressing maids, and the two elder were absorbed in the all-important business of getting ready for the party. Simple as the toilets were, there was a great deal of running up and down, laughing and talking, and at one time a strong smell of burned hair pervaded the house. Meg wanted a few curls about her face, and Joe undertook to pinch the papered locks with a pair of hot tongs.
"Ought they to smoke like that?"
asked Beth from her perch on the bed.
"It's the dampness drying," replied Joe.
"What a queer smell! It's like burned feathers,"
observed Amy, smoothing her own pretty curls with a superior air.
"There, now I'll take off the papers and you'll see a cloud of little ringlets," said Joe,
putting down the tongs. She did take off the papers, but no cloud of ringlets appeared, for the hair came with the papers, and the horrified hairdresser laid a row of little scorched bundles on the bureau before her victim.